Welcome to Greenhouse Grower to Grower, the podcast where we talk to growers from across the greenhouse industry about market trends, innovation, their biggest challenges and opportunities, and more. I'm Brian Sparks, editor of Greenhouse Grower. Before we get into the heart of this most recent episode of the Greenhouse Grower to Grower podcast, I do want to introduce our senior editor, Julie Hewlett, who's going to join me this morning. Julie, thanks for joining me.
Of course. Thanks for having me, Brian. I'm excited to be here.
So as the year kicked off, we've seen a couple of different trends that are shaping the way this industry is heading right now. We knew that coming into 2024, there was going to be quite a bit of expansion among a lot of our top 100 growers. And with the recently completed top 100 growers survey that we did, we are seeing a lot of that. There's a good number of growers who are increasing in size from this past year. However, and as we've reported on a lot in Greenhouse Grower, both in print and online, we have seen some fairly troubling trends to start the year, that being a number of large operations who have been shutting down for a variety of reasons. You start with some of the growers that haven't had a succession plan in place and have had to close because there was nobody to take over the next generation. And then you talk to other growers and they're dealing with regional and state regulatory issues, labor issues, cost issues, and that's kind of started the year on a challenging note for some operations. Julie, are you kind of hearing the same thing with some of the conversations you're having?
Yeah, I think so. You know, it's always unfortunate to see a business close. And in a lot of cases, these are family-owned, long-standing businesses. And it was really shocking to see what was going on in the industry. At the same time, I think that this is an opportunity for the industry to kind of better prepare themselves so that we don't see this trend repeat itself. And that's why we're interested in having these conversations, you know, because we want to talk to the growers that are still in the industry and figure out what are some best practices that they've learned. How are they surviving and thriving in these difficult market conditions? So even though I have seen that trend, as you said, Brian, I think that there's an opportunity to learn and really improve ourselves moving forward.
Yeah, and you bring up a great point there, Julie. In the May issue, in the upcoming May issue of Greenhouse Grower, both in print and online, you'll see a lot of what Julie talked about. So it's not just the cases of why growers are shutting down, but it's also, you know, growers are succeeding for a reason as well. So we really wanted to play that up in our top 100 coverage this year. What are the strategies that some of these growers are taking to not just survive, but also thrive in challenging marketing conditions like this? So the first thing that you'll listen to here is a conversation that I had with Scott Crownober, the CEO of Skagit Horticulture, a couple of months ago. Skagit was one of the operations that in early February announced that they were going to be closing down. And when I talked to Scott, we had a very candid conversation that focused not just on how Skagit came to be in this situation and some of the market pressures that forced them down this road, but then also I really appreciate Scott being very open to share lessons that he's learned, lessons you can share with other growers. What are some of the things that the company maybe could have done differently? So let's listen to the conversation that Scott and I had about Skagit Horticulture.
What I really want to start with is how Skagit Horticulture came to be in this situation as we got into 2024. You know, we were hearing a lot of things as we got out of the pandemic that, you know, there were easements in the supply chain. There was, you know, the concerns over whether the consumers that we gained during the pandemic were going to stick around. And those seem to be pointing things in the right direction, but we're also seeing a lot of troubling signs. So can you talk about Skagit itself and how you guys kind of got to be in the situation?
You know, there is no silver bullet here on how we got here. There's not one piece that really said, okay, that's it, right? That shot us over the edge. So maybe I'll just talk about the pins, right? And they take them as a whole to get to where we are. And so one of those is our ownership he's 80 years old. And it's a big company, but they're still in the process of he wants to retire. He wants to clean up the businesses that he has, and he has many of them. But how do you kind of clean that up to move forward, right? They spent time building all these businesses over the years, But at some point in time, you need to make it simple, right? And so that is a piece of this. The ownership is wanting to retire, wanting to clean up his business. He kiddingly refers it to it as his spaghetti bowl of businesses. You know, how do I straighten that out, right? Yeah. And so there's lots of pieces to it.
Okay.
I think, you know, the other part of that, when they were looking at that, is, you know, where's the risk and reward for each of those businesses, right? And for us, that's where we had our funding coming from, right? Our line of credit, all that kind of stuff. We did not go to the traditional banking method to get a line of credit. Okay. So while that's wonderful, and allowed us to, in some years, not perform like we should have. And again, Brian, I'm talking about a long period of time. I'm not talking just about my 5 years here, right? But you know, the whole time they've owned this, which has been 20 plus years, you know, that allowed those companies to have a bad year and not have to worry about the bank pulling the rug, right? But you also get measured against the other businesses and the other industries that they're in, right? Mm-hmm. And when you're cleaning up your spaghetti bowl, you kind of look at, okay, well, we're the ones that are the least risky, right? And in our case, all right, we give you a line of credit every year. But are you for sure going to pay that back? And are you going to pay that back at a decent interest rate and things like that? So for this business, it fell into the category of risky, right? While the intention was there, the planning, the organization, all that stuff looked really good. And they were very, very happy with the company over the last 5 years. In comparison to their other companies, it just had a lot more risk, right?
Okay.
So that is a piece of it. When you look at that 20-year span, you know, there were a lot of different businesses and different things that happened to get it into this situation. It really wasn't just a bingo, all right, the last 5 years, that's where the issue started.
Right.
So that was a piece of it. They had to look at the risk-reward, the retirement part of it. I would say that... part of it was this organization was run for a lot of years without a business-minded management team, right? They were growers, or they were salespeople, or things like that. And that's not a knock against those people, but you know, as we know, you tend to promote people because they do well, but sometimes you can promote them right into the wrong position, right? Yeah. And shame on management for doing that, because you mistask them, right? They're not able to handle that. And I think that's happens a lot in our industry, right? I remember in my days at McCutchison, you would always take the best salesperson and you say, okay, that guy can be a sales manager. But reality is, he's a great salesperson. He's probably not a great sales manager. And so that happened around here.
Okay.
And the item I didn't write in there was more about Washington State, the business climate. I've talked about that in several different occasions.
Yeah.
We have the highest minimum wage in the country. Well, soon to be beaten by a little bit in California. But we have the highest minimum wage. Washington, Oregon, and California have all decided that 40 hours a week is the maximum work week without paying overtime. Mm-hmm. So that's a challenge for staffing, that our pricing structure doesn't allow us to pay time and a half, right? Mm-hmm. Much less what that does to an employee, right? So we had our employees, seasonal employees, needing to earn a lot higher wage because they also don't get to work 12 months a year either. And right. That seems to be the fallacy in the 40 hours with overtime. Well, they're working 2,080 hours a year when in reality they're not. So staffing is a challenge. And then all the things that all of us face, right? Insurance rates, raw material rates, all those kind of things, benefits, insurance, all those added to that risk reward factor that our ownership was looking at.
Okay.
So that's kind of how we got to this situation, right? It's taken a long time. And that's where we basically are today.
And as you said, I mean, this is not like a light decision to make. It's based on, you know, years of really considering all types of situations.
So the final decision to shut it down was made based on the needs of the bigger company, the ownership, and then also where we were in the season. And a lot of people say, well, why didn't you wait until after spring? Isn't that the right time to do it? Or why didn't you wait till after fall? Or why didn't you do it at the end of the year? And all of those have different scenarios and different outcomes. And for us, when we looked at the cash outlay that it was going to take to pull off spring, again, the risk reward is there, are they going to get paid back that money? Mm-hmm. And secondly, what are those costs that we're going to incur to do that? And is there cash flow to provide to do that? And the decision was, no, this, our inventory is very, very low at this time. We didn't have a lot sitting on the ground. What we did have on the ground, there was some way to market it and sell it and get it out of here, and be done. So that's kind of how we got to the point we did and why we did it then.
All right. Yeah. I'm glad you mentioned there, you know, what inventory you already had, making sure that was going to be accounted for. And then, you know, I don't know if there were customers at the time who were reaching out in the process of reaching out for potential orders, and how you kind of work through those scenarios to make sure that they weren't left, you know, not having their own supply of plants to then sell to their customers.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. And we sell to IGCs, and we also sell to the box stores, and the communication with them was very clear when it happened and what the opportunities were and how they could make it work, where we were in our process to allow them to be able to go forward. Obviously, you know, the IGC business, which was the bigger one, is hard to fill all those spots. And we have had several of the local growers reach out, buy product, take product, you know, to help fill that void. But when you think about, we ship to Washington, Oregon, Idaho, California, Montana, Wyoming, Utah. When you look at that geographic area, there's no way for it to be all made up. So, so in the kind of crude term, yes, there's a sucking sound right now, right? there is unmet demand in the marketplace in the IGC, and depending on what happens with possibly with the box store business too. But we did communicate with those people as soon as we had made decisions and did our best to cover what their needs were and gave them opportunities to get as much product as they could. But I have no doubt there'll be a shortage in the market, some of those spots. So,
okay. Well, let's get into the actual decision-making process then. And I know you were talking here about, you know, that there was obviously several years that went into it, looking at both performing and non-performing units. That's, you know, important too. And then I definitely want to, you know, really talk about, as you mentioned, and this goes back to our initial conversation, your focus on the employees and the team at Skagit, making sure that they were all accounted for.
Yeah. You know, we, when I got here in fall of 2018, and started to get in looking at the finances of the company and things like that. And it became very evident, even more than what they had told me, that, you know, there had been some non-performing years. And some of that was around, I would say it was a production-focused company for a long time, meaning let's grow it and hope the sales team sells it, right? Mm-hmm. And I think the sales team bought into that. And so the amount of inventory and dump and things like that was just absolutely out of control. Okay. And so I started to dissect that and try to decide, first of all, we had 5 units when I first got here. So which ones are clearly makes perfect sense, get rid of it. It's non-performing. It's not going to be performing. You know, this thing is so far in the black or the red that there's no way to save it. Right. So those were the first divisions that went. And then as we kind of moved along and this risk reward concept got more legs, that, you know, okay, here's your line of credit for the year, sell what makes you the most money. And that's where we started to right size the units that were performing, right? One of the reputations we had in the IGC market was we had product year round of every possible thing you could imagine, right? And so it was, we needed 500 mums in the fall, but they went all over the place and it made no money, right? Because we couldn't put a load on the truck. But we did that because we wanted to be a full service vendor to those customers. So we started looking at those things and how do we either make a package, sell other products along with it that made sense, that would make the order minimum make sense for the delivery and all that kind of stuff. Or do we just drop out of some of those items? We don't have to be in business in the IGCs in the month of December, right?
Right.
So we did both of those decisions. And what we ended up was the core business was the IGCs and the mass market. And that meant we eliminated the Sedum program, which was the Utera program. We eliminated producing liners for other growers, right? And that was one of the biggest ones where we looked, we were producing hundreds and hundreds of varieties that we didn't have in our own mix. And you'd have to buy 1,000 cuttings minimum, even though we had an order for 100, right? And so you quickly get behind. And given that 70% of the varieties that you're producing in a liner program, you don't use for yourself, you had no other option, but it became scrap, right? So unless you're selling all those varieties, it makes it a very hard program to be in.
Sure.
So we ended up with those two units. And while they were performing well, we all know the box store and the retail ready business through COVID, up and down and all kinds of stuff. 2 years ago, actually last year, we would have thought our retail ready business would have been booming, and it was flat, if not down a little bit last year, right? Mm-hmm. The box store business became very, very conservative, right? The box store guys said, you know, we had a tremendous amount of dump a couple of years ago. You guys had a tremendous amount of dump. How do we right size that? Well, same thing. They reduced garden center footprints. They reduce product in the store to reduce their own scrap. Well, that all rolls back to less product going to the store. So again, it's sort of those 1,000 pinpricks to get to that point. And I don't know if those numbers in the box stores, the one that we dealt with, will ever come back to where they were, because they've cut out selling in the parking lots a little bit. They've cut out the amount of product that they want in the store. The service level is hard, right? How do you get people in to water that stuff all weekend long, right? So there's an employee piece. And in the state of Washington, you get a high minimum wage, right? So they're faced with those same issues that we are. And so are the IGC growers or customers, right? How do you get somebody in on the weekends to water all that product and make money at it? So,
I mean, just the roller coaster of the past 4 or 5 years. I mean, I can only imagine being on that side of the business.
Yep.
How you navigate that, where, you know, you go from, you know, you're I'll say normal, because that's really, I guess that's the only way to describe it, but 2019 and prior to that maybe was normal. But then, you know, shutdowns, and then, you know, folks, all of a sudden business is booming, and then supply chain issues, and just how to navigate all that. And then trying to decide, okay, you know, we supposedly gained all these new consumers, you know, how are they going to stick around, and how are their buying habits going to change and all that? I mean, that's got to be a significant challenge, I would think.
Yeah. And you look at, I mean, we had hours and hours of conversation going into each season. Okay. What's the economy look like? What's our labor pool looks like? In the state of Washington and Oregon, we looked at what's the fire season going to be like, right? Because you know, what's the water situation, all of those. And we talked those through ad nauseum to come up with our best guess. And some were close and some weren't, right? And the box stores seemed to be the ones that took the biggest hit when it came to that. The amount of product we'd left sitting on the ground for the box stores was tremendous, right? Because there was no demand there. And when you throw in during the COVID period, we all ordered plastics 12 to 18 months out, you had inventory and still have plastic inventory like crazy, right? I mean, our plastic field that should be small is pretty big, right? And we've got enough plastic there to last several years. Yeah. And every grower I've talked to has said the same thing, right? You ought to see our plastic field, right? And even though those prices have gone down, And plastics since then, we still bought those at that higher price, right? So we're still trying to work our way through that inventory.
Yeah.
And the market pressure is, input costs have come down, so you should be able to lower your prices, or you should be able to hold your prices and not come ask for an increase every year.
Yeah.
The box stores especially are, and that's their job, right? That's how they make money, right? Is they put pressure on the growers. And in some cases they just take, right? And that's happened over the last 3 years, where last minute, 2 weeks before shipping, they're coming out and saying, by the way, we need this little cut, right? Or we need that little cut. And so those, again, are all the pressures that get us to where we are.
Yeah. Let's talk about the employees at Skagit. You know, again, just how, in this whole process, yeah, making sure that, you know, you're taking care of your team. Because, I mean, so much of this industry is all about who the team is.
Yeah, exactly. And for us, you know, that's the piece for me that was the most important, was my priority. We have a lot of very good, long tenured people here that know what they're doing. And with us going out of the marketplace, there's not a lot of spots for those people. So we did a couple things. First of all, we were honest and upfront with the employees right off the bat, right? We explained to them what was going on. And we immediately enlisted the services of what was local, what was available in our local counties, because we have facilities in Eastern Washington and Western Washington, and found out what their options were, right? And made them really understand what's going to happen after 60 days at Skagit Horticulture, what their options were, right? They have unemployment. All of our employees were paid in full, right? They got everything they were due, right? Whether it was vacation pay or sick pay or whatever it was. So we paid our employees in full. This was not a bankruptcy. Right. And we certainly have every intention of paying our vendors in full too. So that made it a little bit simpler than saying this is a bankruptcy. Yeah. But the employees, I immediately started getting the word out there to other growers. I've had a lot of calls, hundreds of calls about this person, that person, do you have this, do you have that? We're fortunate that in Western Washington and Eastern Washington, our facilities are located in agricultural regions.
Yeah.
So I've had a lot of people reach out in the local market and say, hey, we have an opening in maintenance, we have an opening in shipping, we have opening as a grower, we're trying to do this, we're trying to do that. And so the response from the local communities, both in Eastern and Western Washington, has been pretty amazing.
Okay.
And then some of the people, I had that personal conversation that says, is this really what you want to do, right? For some people, this is probably the little kick in the butt that, you know, they were doing this job, they were, you know, they thought they liked it, but were they really motivated? Right. So tried to provide resources for those people that had, maybe were just kind of done with this and wanted to try something out.
Yeah.
Luckily the seasonal staff, because of where we are, most of those people will get on with the other farms or the other businesses that are going on. The part that they missed is the early season, right? Because that's when we use them before the berry farmers need them and the tulip farmers and all those different people. So they missed a little bit early, but most of those people will find jobs, seasonal jobs as they go forward.
Right.
And then it really was about networking, right? How can we, I had a lot of help from Todd Downing at Best, right? Yeah. Todd was one of the first guys to get on the phone and said, how do we help? Who are these people? So we gave him resumes and connected our employees with people like that to really help them land in the best spot.
Good. Good.
So far, it's been pretty successful. There's a handful that are not going to probably land right away. But some of those are deciding what they really want to do, right? Where they really want to go. So yeah. I'm really proud of how we worked hard to find positions for people, to help them to find their own positions as they go forward.
One of the things that we're trying to do throughout this issue is not focus too much on the negative, but more on how to stay resilient. But then also, and this is why I brought this up in the conversation here, was focus on the legacy of companies like Skagit Horticulture. So let's talk about that a little bit and what you're most proud of as an organization.
Yeah, I think, and I put some personal and some, you know, business ones too. I think, and this kind of goes back to my comment up in the first bullet point about inside ownership and outside ownership, mm-hmm. because I've read a couple of articles where the comment's been made, oh yeah, there's another outside ownership that failed, right? Mm-hmm. Somebody that's not in our industry. And I guess it's important for me, for people to know that, the reason the outside ownership has it and has had it for 20 years is they bought it from two failing people in the industry, right? So it's not really fair to throw that label on, oh, it's outside ownership. They don't know what they're doing. They ruin our industry. Well, they wouldn't have been here to begin with and wouldn't have operated and hired and taken care of a lot of people for many, many years had it not been two individuals that actually were in bankruptcy, right? Mm-hmm. And that's kind of this how this whole thing started. So,
okay.
But I think why I bring that up is I think the one thing that I'm most proud of here at Skagit Horde is the team of managers that came together and treated this place like it was their own, right? Mm-hmm. We didn't have an owner that was looking over our shoulder every day, you know, on our facility, telling us what to do, how to do it, when to do it, and all that stuff. Yeah. We developed that as a team, and our group was able to, through strategic planning, based on what ownership wanted, develop a plan to be successful and to run it like it was theirs, right? That you know, if they were in the shipping department, it's not okay to say, oh, we'll get the truck there tomorrow, right? Own it. Take accountability for it and get the truck there today like it's supposed to be.
Yeah.
When I got here 5 years ago, that first Mother's Day, I started in September of 18, that following Mother's Day in 19, we probably missed 15% of our orders that were supposed to be there for Mother's Day. And I had customers calling me absolutely livid, right?
Yeah.
And that was the beginning of, how do we never let that happen again? Last year and every year after that, from 20 to now, our people took Saturday and Sunday off before Mother's Day because we committed to it, right?
Yeah.
And they had to do it. They didn't get to look up to an owner and say, how do we do this? You figure out the problem. Tell us what to do and we'll do it. They had to figure it out on their own, and we had to do it as a team because it took every one of them to make it work. Planning had to be done right. Supply chain had to be done right. All those things had to happen so that the end product out the door was delivered to the customer on time and the quality they wanted.
Right.
I think the other piece that I'm very proud of is in the systems world, right? So many greenhouses buy an ERP system and the first thing they do is start to bastardize it, right? To change it. Oh, nope, I'm in the greenhouse business. I got to do this. I got to do it this way, right? This is how I have to look at sales. This is how to look at, you know, whatever it is growing. When we launched, so I started in fall of 18, February of 2019, we launched Sage. And the commitment was, do not destruct it. Use it how it came out of the box. And we are so happy we made that decision and molded our business to that system. It has made our life amazingly easy.
Yeah.
Just by not trying to change everything and how we think that business has to be done.
Mm-hmm.
So again, that's the team, right? The owner, if there's an owner here, he could have very easily said, no, let's fix that. Let's change that, do whatever. But the team, the mantra was use it how we got it. So that's, this team here is probably what I'm most proud of and how they gelled as owners, right? I didn't see them as employees. I saw them as owners.
Okay.
I truly cared about the business, wanted it to be right, saw each other as customers, right? The purchasing team knew if they didn't get it here in time that production was going to be in trouble. And they knew production was their customer. And that mode was known throughout the whole company.
Okay. That's interesting. You know, you've got internal and external customers that you're trying to meet the needs of both.
Absolutely.
And you know, that's very refreshing. Yeah. You know, I want to get into the last couple things here, and this is, I'll say, is when I especially appreciate your openness in some of these, because I know these are not always easy things to discuss. So, the first one is, you know, anything, you know, that your team could have done differently in this situation.
Yeah, and I kind of put two there, and I think the world's moving so much faster, right? And I think we all obviously want to be patient, make the right decisions, things like that. But I think we spend a lot of time second guessing ourselves, and that kind of ties into that second part of people, right? Mm-hmm. We are a nice industry, right? We generally get along with our competitors. We get along with all of our vendors. We all shake hands. Yeah. We all love to go to the trade show and do all that stuff, which is good, but it leans us towards maybe being a little bit complacent and not making decisions as quickly as we can, mm-hmm. especially when it comes to staffing. I read an article a couple of weeks ago. It's interviewing a bunch of retired CEOs and what was their greatest accomplishments and what did they regret the most. And it was funny how many of them said, I wish I would have moved people on out of the company sooner than I did. Right. And it wasn't, you know, being mean. It was more about it would have been best for that person also. Yeah. And kind of when I look back at the people that have left my organizations I've been involved with, they all moved on and survived and for the most part did better for themselves. But I should have done that sooner. I should have moved those people. The minute I saw whatever it was, the trait that we didn't need, being miscast, right? We talked about that earlier, right? Hey, I promoted you to be an X and that was my mistake. I'm sorry. So what we normally do is say, I feel bad for that. And I'm going to let you flounder for a long time.
Yeah.
I should have moved on and let him go and moved him on quicker.
Okay. All right. And then the last piece of this is, you know, any lessons or insights for other growers that you can talk about?
I think we all talk about the universities all the time, right? There's just not enough kids coming out. We have to invest in ourselves, right? We need to spend the money. And you know, American Horde has the class that they've, what, they're in their third generation now, or is it second?
They're,
I guess, second.
Starting the second one, yeah.
Yeah. That thing should be three times that size, right? One, there is employers who would send their employees to do that. But that's the only way we're going to improve the business people and the growers and everything else in this industry is to do it ourselves. The universities have limited capacity to give us what we need. So we need to figure out a way to do it ourselves. And I think American Horde is a great start at what they're doing, but they need to, if possible, you know, ramp that up a lot faster and make it a lot bigger.
Yeah.
And then our own key staff, we did a lot of things around here with management training, with individualized technical skills, whatever that might be. Once you identify that staff, if we're going to be a successful industry, we need to invest in those people and really keep them engaged in what we're doing. It's funny, I salespeople weren't always, I was one for a long time. And my salespeople finally figured me out. And that's what I told them. I want you to raise prices until that customer is just about to walk away. Huh. And Skagit for the IGCs, other people in the industry followed our pricing, right? When our pricing went out, everybody else's pricing came out, right?
Yeah.
And I really challenged both of my teams to, you know, get that price where it should be, do the best you can. But there are market conditions, right? We all have different cost factors, right? We're up here in the left corner of America. It's a long ways to ship to California, right? It doesn't look like it on a map, but it is. So one of our biggest challenges was just freight cost, right? How do we get it to the market that we want to serve in an economical manner? But that doesn't mean you shouldn't be raising your prices as much as you can. And the last two things, you know, and I've heard folks from Metroliner talk about this and many, many people. We have so much data available to us right now. We need to use it.
Yeah.
It's good. It's clean. It truly, when we did our strategic planning here, excuse me, it was critical that it was backed up by the data.
Yeah.
It's not fun. That's not easy, but you should have somebody on your staff that does that. And there are people that like to do that kind of thing. But if we're going to be successful, we got to look at the data and do what works. And then strategic planning, right? We did a formal plan once a year and had 2 to 3 offshoot meetings about it, right? And that helped us guide us to where we were going. Operating by the seat of the pants day to day, can't do it. Not going to work.
So as we were going to press on our May 2024 issue, we did hear of the news that Smith Gardens had actually stepped in to acquire most of the assets of Skagit Horticulture. And Julie was able to talk to Eric Smith at Smith Gardens to learn a little more. Julie, can you kind of talk a little bit about that conversation before we get into it?
Yeah, of course. I was really excited to talk to Eric at Smith Gardens just to get an insider's perspective on how they thought that this was a strategic move for their operation and what their plans are for the future. So you'll hear more about that briefly in my conversation with Eric. The one thing that really stood out to me that he said is that this expansion is helpful to Smith Gardens to really take advantage of the automation that they already have at some of their locations. They had invested in various types of automation, but it wasn't really being utilized at its full potential because they were so overcrowded. So if they can make those locations less crowded and use this new space with the acquisition of Skagit, it'll put that new technology to its greatest potential.
Great. Thank you, Julie. Now, please listen to the conversation that Julie had with Eric Smith.
On February 6th, I think you guys broke the news that Skagit was closing. That was a surprise to us that was happening. And certainly April 8th is a challenging time of year to do a business transaction,
yeah,
let alone an operational change. So early on, when we signed a letter of intent with Skagit, as we were working out an agreement, we asked them to continue to keep planting and to keep their operations going, so that when we, if we would have come to an agreement, that we would be able to continue to operate as if nothing had happened, and we would assume the plants and so on. And they did that, and they did a really nice job. With their 60-day notice that they gave to their team, they were able to clean up the facilities really well and present it to us in good clean working order.
How did this make sense for your operation? Like, is this a strategic move that you had been considering for a while, even, you know, before? I mean, just expanding in general, not necessarily, yeah, Skagit.
Right. We didn't know it was coming. It was a surprise to us. The reason why we acted as quickly as we did, one, it's live plants and they die without a caretaker. And we simply needed more space to fulfill our customer demand and continue to say yes to customer opportunities. As you said, Riverbend is 24 acres of indoor space and 20 acres of outdoor space. It's an immediate boost to our capacity and relieve some of the peak pressure we feel in our other sites. We've made long-term investments in automation, in forklifts and floors in two of our sites, and being over capacity in those sites ruins the effectiveness of those investments because there simply isn't room to operate. So we really have an opportunity to gain efficiency in our other sites by taking some of the capacity pressure off our other sites.
So you guys primarily serve big box customers, right?
We do.
Okay. So I know you mentioned just having this helps with the opportunity to say yes to more customer opportunities. Would you also be diversifying your crop mix at all?
Good question. Probably not so much. This was very much in line with the same product mix that we currently produce. And so we're in the process of filling customer needs right now in 24, but we're scratching our head on how we will utilize this facility in 2025. No doubt it will be growing annuals and perennials and hanging baskets and containers in the future.
And will you be using this facility immediately, or will it wait a little bit more until like spring production next year? What is your timeline?
We shipped our first orders last Thursday into stores. There's an experienced site operation management team intact at the Riverbend site. Riverbend is what we're calling it. It's Riverbend in Mount Vernon, Washington. Yet we felt strongly that there needed to be a person steeped in our culture to help make the transition because it was so quick. While the growing facilities and maintenance of the facilities is a strength of the team and really is very similar to how we would operate, the patterns of communication between sales, inventory, fulfillment, transportation really do change. So we appointed an interim site and integration manager from our team to lead the transition. His name is Andres Alamillo. And so he'll serve as interim site manager. And he's been a site manager for us before, as well as our continuous improvement manager. He will lead the team, providing necessary connections to our leadership, resources and people, applying our business culture to the new team members, and inevitably troubleshoot the challenges that are present in a transition like this. The other piece is systems, in that we both Skagit and Smith Gardens used Sage X3 Grower Vertical as an ERP system. And while that might sound advantageous, they're different implementations. And so we are continuing to use the existing implementation and delaying implementing a crossover to our system until after spring. There's simply too many moving pieces to do this successfully. And it was something else just to have our IT team arrive on site April 6th, work the weekend, and then for us to be able to operate and deliver orders on Thursday. So we're really proud of what those guys were able to accomplish and the collaboration of the existing management team that was there. And then us coming together and working together on this.
That does sound like quite the Herculean task of 2 days before
it was. It was a bit nuts.
Are there any particular upgrades that you guys would like to make to the new facility, or are you, you know, leaving much of it as is as you get into your own production?
At the moment, the Riverbend site is about 30% utilized. And so we look forward to expanding our business and fully utilizing the site.
Are there any changes that might affect or impact your customers at this time?
No, I don't think so. I think our customers will be unaffected.
And did you inherit staff members from Skagit? What does that look like?
We did. They were fully staffed on February 8th or February 6th when they made their announcement, and we selected a management team from the group that was there, and they're with us today.
Hey, do you know how many are on the management team?
Yes, there is. Let me do a little head count in my head here. Let's say 7, including our site manager.
Okay, and the site manager is from Smith Gardens, right?
Yes.
And I wanted to ask, too, about advice for any other operations that might be looking to grow or expand. Is there anything that you guys have learned through this process that might be helpful for other people in a similar situation?
Let's talk later on this summer, and I'll have a better frame of mind for that.
Thanks for joining us. You can learn more at greenhousegrower.com. Please subscribe to this podcast wherever you listen, and please leave us a rating as it helps other podcast listeners find the show.